Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Soleria Report. We have a series that we've been thinking on for a long time on, we're going to call it the Unsustainable Development Goals, as in UN, as in UN. But we're here to talk about the SDGs with the person who inspired us to do this, who is one of the leading experts here in Europe and now globally on what's called the SDGs. Ripka Zellmacher. And Ripka, thank you for finally dragging me against my will. Every time I look into the SDGs, I get so frustrated and angry. I just think, no. You know.
I share those feelings, especially when you're in this dossier and in this research for over like more than 15 years. And you already see it coming. I also found on my own website in interesting times. Because it's interesting times we're coming. I already saw that coming 5 years ago. And I get the frustration because in the name of doing good, really bad things are unrolled over the people.
So I have to stop you just because I didn't introduce Trudy. And I told you,
we
love dogs in interviews. And Trudy, your dog, is here, who I very much like. And so I should just, should we... Trudy?
She's always here. Come, Trudy. Come. So, come here.
She wants to. Trudy, you want to be introduced.
She's always with me, also with lectures and with presentations. So, normally she's really quiet, but you will have it now that she becomes the real terrier again. But anyway, it's fine.
Okay, so you're an author. We have, you're someone who truly loves nature. So I think of you as a nature... I don't know if you'd say a naturalist or something, but a nature. So you're an author, you're a researcher, you're a writer, you're a journalist, but you're also a photographer. So you've created, so you have several books, but this is your latest one.
Yeah, this is what I call my meisterwerk. It's about my background as a Frisian, so the Frisian nature. So I explore in three time frames from... The ice ages through the heathen times when you had the battle of all these peoples which created Frisia to the Christian time when you had all these big abbeys here in Friesland, so when we were Catholics. So I walk through these ages and then I explore what is nature? What are we talking about when we say we want to conserve nature? And do we also want to conserve peoples like Frisians?
Right.
Where is the true Frisian? Is he still there? The one who moved to battleground saying, I'd rather die than be a slave. Because this is the monument also that is here near Stavoren. And it says, rather dead than slave. Right. And this is also the title of my my book. So that you want to preserve a mentality as well.
So you see the incredible beauty of Friesland when you look at this book. And when I listen to you talk about the SDGs, that's what I feel. I feel that it's a passion coming from your love of the nature and the land and the people and the animals. Yeah. So it's coming out of that love. And the SDG is one of those systems. When I used to work in Washington, we would take the name of any legislation, like Helping Communities Act,
and we would invert
it and say, okay, Destroying and Controlling Communities Act. That's what
it is.
Yeah. Everything's an inversion.
Yeah.
And if you look at the SDGs, everything is an inversion. And I see your love of nature and your passion for nature as bumping into this inversion and making you very...
motivated. I'm making me very motivated, especially motivated, you could say that.
Yeah,
motivated. To show that they're really inverting. So in the name of climate protection, you can see it, for example, in Germany. They have already built hundreds of wind farms into forests. So they just cut down the forests and then they put a wind farm in there, destroying raptor populations. There are 500,000 of protected beds are destroyed because of that. This is just one of the few examples. Here near Stavoren, in a Natura 2000 area, the government helped an investor to put their 89 big windmills in...
in a bird migration.
In a bird migration area.
I couldn't believe it.
And they get all space. But if you are a farmer or a fisherman... Then every year you have to apply for a new license to operate in the name of nature protection. And right. I think this is the whole game that is being played. So the big investors related to governments get all space, and the nature conservation is only focused on harassing the normal people living in the land. So in the name of nature conservation, you then get the traditional conservation of protecting areas from unnecessary destruction is morphed into an ideology also, which is called environmentalism.
Well, it's a control system.
Which is a control system,
Yeah. So let me step back and let's just go for the if people are not familiar. Mm-hmm. So the Sustainable Development Goals were goals that were created through the United Nations.
Yeah.
So it's through the UN. Mm-hmm. They have a deep history. We'll go into that. And so it didn't start with the UN, but it got grafted onto the UN. So it's 17 goals, and they all sound perfectly wonderful. It's very hard to say, oh,
of course.
I'm against poverty.
It's like hearing Miss World in a bikini round saying, so, oh, we want world so peace and free food.
I'm sure you know them by heart, but I brought...
Yeah. Well, I forget the order, but... I was the first one in Holland and I think in Europe to make an overview, a guide of what are they per goal saying that they're doing and what is actually happening on the basis of a more follow the money strategy. Who is earning more power because of these goals? What is also the ideology behind it? And then you also find that Holland, the Netherlands, are one of the leaders in implementing the agenda. And this is also... why now the farmers are hit worse here in Holland, because the Netherlands is the leading actor here in implementing these goals.
Well, number two is food. So we're going to go into food deeply in the next. So we're doing, this is our overview, but the next one is food. So we'll get into that there. But walk us through the 17. What are they?
The 17 goals are actually, just reduce them to one. Let's keep it simple.
Control?
Well, that's the basic thing, and it's about the privatization of public space, and also of... With public money, yeah.
So it's public money, private profits...
Exactly.
With total control of everything.
Yeah, and this is what sustainability is, and it's just about making profits with public money.
Well, I think it's asserting central control of all the resources... and doing it in a way where you get the people to pay for the privatization, and the privatization creates profits.
Yeah, and these private.
So think of it as a leverage buyout. I'm gonna do a leverage buyout of your assets using your money, and when it's over, I got all the money and the property.
But the central piece of this, so we can simplify this 17 goals to just one, which is somewhere in the center, and this is SDG 13, climate action. If this goal was not in the agenda, the whole agenda would fall.
Really?
Yeah. This is the
central... Because it's control of energy?
It's about energy supply. And through energy, it's also through food and also through land grab.
Right.
And the land grab CO2 connection you can easily make if you look into this ecological footprint calculating.
Right.
I did an article on that for a popular science magazine already in 2008. And I spoke to... great economic scientists, and they were saying, we do not understand, it's such crap science, and still it is elevated into public policies, and it is promoted everywhere, while it's some new Malthusian crap. So why are they still using it? Well, the reason is that they use this Malthusian absolutism, saying that the only true value is land. So if you have to, just like the Catholic Church did, pay for your sins... your sins in CO2 have to be converted into land area. So then they say, for example, every Dutch man and woman, they use 5 hectares of land for their consumption. But what do they do? The outcome is in the input already. Because what do they say? You have to compensate all your CO2 by planting trees.
Right.
Well, of course, it's not about trees. It's about the area, space, that you have to buy to plant the trees. Do you get it?
So let me step back for a second, because one of the things I want to talk about today is the money, how the money works. But what you're watching is a serious multiple personality disorder around their pitch. Mm-hmm. So CO2 is a problem mm-hmm. if the cows live on the land. But it's not a problem when the F-35 goes shooting across five times a day.
For example, yeah, and you here you hit the nail, because this is also with this this senseless nitrogen discussion that they launched in Holland. If you look into, there's new research of the TU Delft Technical University, and it's just a modeling study, but it's a great indication of what air travel, which is the pinpoint for globalists, if they right. they cannot meet each other, if they don't have this air travel, which is completely exempted from nitrogen emissions. And how do they do this?
So they just exemptioned the corporate jets from green aviation fuel. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, no, that's the CO2 part, but I'm now referring to the nitrogen part, okay. which is an extension of the CO2 agenda. It doesn't right. have anything to do with nature protection, of course.
Right.
What it's about is the air travel is exempted from these policies because they only have to deal with the emissions that they have from takeoff and landing cycles. So this means that above 900 meters, 3,000 feet, there's no emissions anymore. They just, but this can be up to.
So the Lockheed F-35s are not a problem.
No,
right.
No. Just by a political agreement, that somehow the emissions are vanished. And this, this is the study of TU Delft. Up to 70% of the deposition that can be attributed is then just moved away. Just,
so you might not realize this, but it's a matter of great interest globally that Jeff Bezos' yacht can't get out through the Rotterdam without taking apart the bridge. Mm-hmm. And now the Dutch have decided, the people in Rotterdam refuse to take down their bridge just so Jeff. But apparently, when you're building Jeff Bezos' yacht, that's not a problem.
No. It's still, they are now the private jet sets that want to control us through Davos and Bilderberg. And Bilderberg, of course, the royal family has been instrumental in this. And this is also one of the reasons why Holland, the Netherlands, has been instrumental in implementing this whole agenda.
Right.
And so we call it the private jet sets, because you know what the word jet set comes from, of course. Jet set just meant that those who are fortunate enough to pay for air travel.
Right.
So they were also the elite then. But now, right. Everybody can travel by air. I did it a lot as well. And now, so we can now call them the private jet set.
Right. So, but when it comes to accepting yachts or corporate jets, mm-hmm. they feel no, in other words, there's no concern. Somebody who was sincerely concerned about all these things would not want to have a yacht or a private jet.
No, of course, but this just means that they are normal people. Yeah, who can be concerned about CO2 or climate? A normal person is concerned about his daughter or his children or about humane businesses and about having a good life.
Right, but they have no concern
so
about it.
They are concerned about having a good life for themselves. Yeah. So I understand them, and that's not a crime to have a good life for yourself.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is they've envisioned nitrogen or CO2 as simply mechanisms of selling control, right?
Yeah. But let's focus on
this. This is not something they believe.
Well. Could be that maybe I heard from this ecologist professor that was one of my mentors. They say your opponents come in two ways: donkeys, like morons, and the villains. Well, the villains are a minority; those who really know what they're up to. So most of them are just morons.
So the bankers know, but everybody else is a donkey.
No, there's through the whole line of government, and there's many people who know, but they're also driven by this ideology. So, and I think, and this is why I also put many attention to the ideology, which is in SDG 16 as well, peace, justice, and strong institutions, because again, Holland is instrumental in implementing, because then you get to the Earth Charter.
Right.
Which is created also by Maurice Strong, you saw them on a boat with the Ark of Hope, where right. these tables were put into, like a religion. Right. And people need a religion and a motivation to do good. And if I talk to most people, like also people working for a public bank, the Waterschapsbank, which is the private bank with 90 billion euros on the balance, that is financing now this the implementation of this agenda. But if I speak to an investment advisor there, it's just a normal guy who likes to go on holiday. They're not ideologically minded. They are just thinking they're doing something good. So with most of them, it's not that. But in the top dogs, they really are moved, or maybe infested by this ideology. And the Earth Charter, and it actually says that, well, it's anti-Christian in some way and anti-humanist.
Right.
The core of this agenda is anti-human because right. it reduces people to tons of CO2 that should not be there. So if you have the core of climate action, it says humans should not be on this planet.
Well, so it's very interesting. I told you I was just reading
Jacob Nordengard.
Yeah. Nordengard.
Well, so my Swedish is also not that Nordengard. Yeah.
So I met him when I was up in Stockholm, and then I saw him again. He spoke in the Malmo conference. And in his latest book, which is Global Financial Coup, mm-hmm. he has a proposal that a group from Iowa made for the Earth Charter, and it was not adopted at that time in 92.
No.
But the proposal was basically that every country be given a quota of how much they had to reduce their population, mm-hmm. and it be enforced with trade and credit embargoes.
Yeah.
And if you read the description, it's exactly what we're watching happening right now.
Yeah, most people still are not aware that this Earth Charter, it was launched at the Peace Palace in The Hague.
Right.
And it was updated in 2018. It got more judicial teeth.
Right.
To enforce these goals, because it's the ideological underlaying of the Sustainable Development Goals. And they're not innocent, because there was, in Rule 16, they were also saying that discarding of fish should be banned. In 2012, what did the European Commission order? The discard ban. So fishermen were allowed to put overboard, they were now forced to land against heavy losses and also heavy loss of space on the ship. Again, and then destroy it on land, for example. So it's just one.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. So in the name of, and this is the most important, which you also found on the Georgia Guidestones that have been destroyed lately.
Right.
Earth is pronounced with a head letter, like it's a person. And this is one of the core tenets of materialism. If you make the material holy in some way. And this is also the binding part with climate action. If you reduce people to tons of CO2 that should not be there, this is also a form of materialism. You, Catherine, I are not more than 50 tons of CO2 that should not be there.
Right.
And we have to be halved before 2030.
Can be converted into private profits.
Of course, right. Yeah. And here comes the part that they maybe borrowed from the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages, is that you can buy off this debt of living, the you should not be living debt, to bankers. And this is this whole frame of CO2 credits and CO2 compensation that they put now into place by, again, under Dutch lead, the greening of the financial system group led by Frank Alderson, who is also in the BIS, the Bank for International right. Settlements, and the other one, the head of the Dutch National Bank, Klaas Knot, which is also now the director of the Financial Stability Board of the BIS.
Right.
So again, the Dutch are very important and instrumental in implementing this agenda by creating a totally new payment system based on digital currency, where CO2 as a credit is implemented in the payment system.
Right. I want to keep bringing this back to insider-outsider,
mm-hmm.
okay? Because what you're describing with the CO2 credits is an insider-outsider system.
Yeah.
But the insider-outsider system depends on a couple of other multiple personality. Mm-hmm. So it's perfect you brought up the BIS, because the BIS and the central banking system is at the very heart of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And the BIS was created to deal with the German reparations. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity for the bankers was to create a central bank for central banks that is above the law. So,
yeah.
So there is, it is above all sovereign law. It has sovereign immunity. Mm-hmm. And we are watching the general creation from the time of the BIS creation on of international organizations that have complete immunity from sovereign law.
Yeah.
So there's an insider system flowing out of that, and then there's an outsider system. And so the CO2 or the nitrogen doesn't apply to the insiders, just the outsiders.
No, but it's very easy to see once you you're not able to unsee it again.
Then right.
You know what they're implementing under a name of doing good. The same has also applied to biodiversity.
Yeah. Right.
Banks are starting with biodiversity offsetting schemes. What is this based on? This report already in 2008, The Economics of Ecosystems and Biodiversity, led by Pavan Sukhdev, a banker of the German bank, the Deutsche Bank, who has now moved to be vice president of the WWF. And they implemented this system of biodiversity offsetting already in an amendment for the European the European Union.
Right.
So this is the other part that they're implementing. So saying that you have a theoretical debt on nature that you again have to compensate in hectares. So they they calculate your theoretical debt that you have on biodiversity and transform this into hectares. And for example, you have the ASN Bank in Holland, which promotes itself as being the Green Bank. And what they do now, in the name of this debt, they calculated a massive, like trillions of trillions of debt to nature. And they are now trying to implement this scheme, which will work the same as CO2 compensation. And again, the Dutch are instrumental in here because we have this public organ compared to the IPA in the Americas, which made a metric for biodiversity, which actually says that biodiversity is equal to land area.
What?
Yeah. I made an investigation about that, and there were questions in Parliament about this as well. Because I did an investigation with the public information law, so I get their research data, and then calculated how did they get to this tremendous loss of biodiversity figures that were also used by the OECD, for example. What did they do? And then, for example, they say there is 66% of biodiversity left in the year. For example, in Holland, they said 85% of biodiversity is lost. Well, then you just get into their methods. And if you just, it's the emperor's clothes. If you put
Okay, so let me back up and hit some of the other ones that are easier to understand.
Yeah.
So if you look at the energy usage that comes from heavy use of digital systems. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a common one these days is Bitcoin. So if you look at crypto and how much energy it uses, mm-hmm. it's fantastic. And it's not just crypto, it's all the digital financial systems.
Yeah.
And what the BIS and the central banks are trying to do is build a financial transaction control grid.
Yeah.
So I call it digital concentration camps. Mm-hmm. It's fantastically energy useful.
Yeah.
It uses fantastic amounts of energy. So, you know, the joke that Bitcoin uses more energy than Switzerland. So they have no problem with promoting systems at the same time that have massive energy use.
Yeah, of course, but it's never been about nature conservation or anything. It's only about power And money.
Right.
But power in the first, because if you have a lot...
Why is it that all the people in the system don't see that?
That's because of propaganda. There has been, again, in Holland is the main party in this. They have invested so much billions through both the European Commission and the Dutch government and the postcode lottery, which is the biggest private lottery right. in the world, into the propaganda saying that there's a climate disaster. So that's the first thing a child learns at school is that there is a climate disaster and that we humans are bad. And they put it also in education.
So let me bring up the new one. I think today they turn on CERN for the first time in quite a while.
Okay.
The collider.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a massive energy.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody ever discussed that? As to where that fits in the sustainable development goals?
Yeah, okay. But your point is where's the hypocrisy. But it's not hypocrisy. I think it's pure evil.
Well,
at the core, it's pure evil. It's a satanic ideology of materialism. Because what is Satanism? It's about materialism and moral relativism. And also the that you make yourself holy.
Right.
Yeah.
So I agree. I would probably use demonic instead of satanic, but...
Yeah, well, it's
right,
the same thing.
Yeah. But
so this is also what you see, just like with the Nazis who made the whole stadium do like this. This is also with this whole climate thing.
Well, it's trying to strip the whole world of... If you look at how our world works energetically and spiritually, it's trying to say that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And strip it out of all life.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Are you a reader of Sheldrake? I'm a huge Rupert Sheldrake.
Yeah. I did an interview with him as well.
And it was interesting. In the 90s, I was trying to understand how places work economically.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't make sense of it until I started reading Sheldrake. And then I was like, oh, they're fields. A neighborhood is a field.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to understand that the field was what drove... the economics and everything I've been taught in business school was relatively irrelevant to field dynamics.
Yeah.
And it's as though they're trying to get everybody to resonate with the machines and the cell towers and wipe out or control the field.
Yeah, well, actually, they're promoting 18th century materialism from de la materie, le homme machine. So this is a great point that Sheldrake makes also in his last books, like The Science Delusion and his following, that they say that science is equal to the ideology of materialism. Which, of course, is not. No, but this is also what...
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. This is also what neo-Darwinists do, and they believe in miracles. Because if you say that the sonar system of a bat can just... Well, if it takes millions of years and then suddenly it exists, if it would happen in one split of a second or in millions of years, it would be still the belief in miracles.
But I think they're trying to come up with a system that will allow them to control living intelligence centrally. Don't you think that's what they're trying to do?
Well, but this is more speculation. So I thought let's stick more to the facts about the financial stuff and the ideology between it. And the ideology, you need it to motivate the masses. You have to, just like Harry Potter, you have to put a spell on them to follow you.
Right, but I don't, one word I almost never use is mass. Because one of the things I learned when I worked in politics is the control grid, the population breaks down very quickly into many different groups.
Yes, but that's the whole strategy of the SDGs. This is building partnerships for the goals. So instead of a big mass, you get all kinds of... And this is straight from the PR book of Bernays.
Like marketing. It's marketing ice cream.
Yeah.
There are many different varieties, and it's all designed to suck lots of different people in different ways into... headed to where you want them to go.
Yeah, so the other key, I would say, is SDG 17. It's all about network power. And this is straight from the PR book of Edward Bernays, that you have people are followers of leaders, but every group has its own leader that it respects. So if you create, and this is straight from cybernetics.
Right.
It's cybernetic power. So every group, you create a group of multinationals who follow the leader, which right. is in Holland, it's the DSGC with Unilever and this guy, Paul Polman, who was awarded being the green man of the UN. He was also instrumental with David Cameron of creating this post-development 2015 development agenda. And this was the high-level panel of eminent persons that he was part of. Also with this climate advisor of Obama, John Podesta was in that as well. But they are with DSM, with Fijke Sijbesma, and under the leadership of the former prime minister, they try to put all the multinationals into the bag of the sustainable development
goals. Here's the thing. The way it goes, in my experience, is money. In other words, what they do is they print an infinite amount of money. Mm-hmm. And the way they build those groups and they keep those groups together is by buying people with extraordinary amounts of taxpayer supported money or central bank printed money. And basically you're trying, you know, when I was on Wall Street, nobody ever said, how do we go to Rome? They said, how do we make money going to Rome? Because if we can engineer it so everybody makes money going to Rome, they'll just take us to Rome. And so what I see is pumping out huge amounts of money to buy people into this system.
Yeah.
And that's how they build the partnerships.
And this is how they also enforce it, because I was already talking about this waterboard bank that we have. It was erected in 1945, just after the disaster in Zeeland, when thousands of people drowned because the dikes broke. But the idea was already from 1938. But what did they do? At first, it was a public bank really supporting public goals, like, keeping the dikes dry. So that we have the water boards here in Holland, which is unique, I think, in the world, because you have, it's the oldest public boards in Dutch history. They are already there in the 14th century.
Right.
Keep us safe from the sea, because we are a sea people. And but they expanded their task to the SDG goals. So now...
So the water boards are implementing it.
Yeah. So they now have the water boards implementing this agenda, but also through the water board bank. Because what does in their year reports in 2021, they celebrated, we have the highest amount of outstanding loans in history. Like, for 1 year, they already borrowed 12 billion euros extra to all these public boards, the local governments.
Right.
But what do they do then? They only give the loans if you show them your CO2 records.
Right.
And they want to enforce that. Now it's still a little bit voluntarily, but they look at your balance. And this is also another organ that is also in Holland again, the Global Reporting Initiative. It's based in Amsterdam, does the same for bigger companies. They just look your records. How is your CO2 credit?
If you look at what they're doing in the bank accounts, in the brokerage accounts, and on the credit cards, mm-hmm. they're building a system where ultimately they will be able to control you through all of those, you know, and literally they can turn off your bank account, your credit card, if you don't follow their...
Well, it's very easy. You could already see it coming for years. And also in scientific publications, they say, now is the time to enforce this CO2 credit system. And it's logic, because if you have a target set by the European Commission, you have to halve CO2 emissions. The only way to do it is through a totalitarian system. And the only way to reach that is by making CO2 tons, something you have to buy off on paper.
So then you
integrate it in the financial system.
The only way to do it is to create a digital control system.
Exactly. So that when you have, for example, I have traveled this month and I have eaten nice fish and meat and had a party. And then, the government says, or the bank says, too much CO2 in your consumption. Now you go into climate lockdown, or you have to pay So this is the system that you have to move to.
So once I get a complete digital control system, so let's say I have, whether it's digital IDs and CBDC, so I think of it as they've been building a control system around every one of us. And it's like building a house around us. They've got the floor, they've got the ceiling, they've got three walls. They don't have the fourth wall. But when you get a digital ID and CBDC, they snap in the fourth wall. And my goal with my audience is to get people to walk out of the house before they snap it in. So, but the once you snap it in, you've got complete control. And so here's the thing. Once you have complete control, do you need to pretend anymore to justify this is being environmentally healthy with these kinds of systems, or do you just have complete control and you can blow all of this off?
Well, no, you just create a big Ponzi scheme around the economy to greenwash yourself and make middle and small business and civilians pay for it. This is what it is.
Right, but once you've got complete control of them and you've wiped out all the small businesses and small farms, do you need to bother with the inversion anymore? Can you just go to straight on tyranny and mind control?
Well, yes, if you look at the many billions... she's again a terror. No, that's fine. Yeah, she's already okay. Yeah, she's fine. So always keep your sense of humor. This is must be the main message also of this whole part. Because eventually it will become like Pinky and the Brain. You have the brain who says, I want to control the world. And then he makes up all kinds of systems, just like with James Bond. But in the end, there's always also human failure. So I think
eventually
it will collapse.
If it's a marketing... So it's a marketing plan to market complete control.
No.
And so far it's been very effective.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's incredibly wasteful. And so do you still, can you still afford the unproductive inversion once you've got complete control? That's my question. Will they just let this go or?
I don't know, because, not everyone in the top of the government is pure evil, of course.
Right.
But they still will come a long way, of course, because it looks so attractive. At least there's a leader with a plan to follow for a better world. Who doesn't want it?
Right.
This is such an effective marketing strategy. And then you also have, actually, the sustainable development goals should be totally black, just black. But they made all kinds of colors, like it's a lollipop for a toddler.
So let me ask a couple of other questions. So I read Jacob's book on the Rockefellers, and I've read Patrick's books where he takes technocracy and climate change back. You know, you go all the way to the 30s. They've been working and planning and building this for a long time and put an incredible amount of money into it. And I said to him, you know, because my family came out of the Rockefeller Syndicate. And so I said, you know, I've always said to people, what the Rockefellers know about more than anything is how to create monopolies. That's really their claim to fame. It's not oil, it's monopolies. This is an extraordinary investment over many, many decades.
Yeah.
You know, so if you look at what's hitting us all like a tsunami, this has been building for decades. And people have been warning us about it for decades.
Yeah, and then you would not believe it. I can still remember I was, it was 2005 or so, I was going on a report about the new wolves in Germany, who the new wolf family who was just came there from Poland. And I already predicted the wolves will spread. And well, they're just like dogs. They will cross highways and come to Holland. Well, they are here. And on the CD player, my father was with me. This was one of the, he was just like my buddy. We were going on a report. And we had this metal CD of System of a Down. And it was crazy. And they said, they're trying to build a prison. They're trying to build a prison. And I thought, this guy's paranoid. Because I'm... But with hindsight, now we can see that they were really trying to do it. And it's also, the Dutch government is a copycat of the liberal American government. We also have this... All these NGOs, for example, also the...
Well, but part of it is, if you look at all the different people in the system, you know, very few of them can see the thing whole. And, you know, they just can't fathom the whole.
No, but you have to do research for a long time. And once you see it, it's you're unable to unsee it.
Right.
But this is also, you start first with the front. You start right. with the science that they say they have in their hands. So you just start unraveling the science and find that there's nothing there. Actually, it's just models and assumptions.
Right.
The same as I just told you about this biodiversity offsetting, MSA biodiversity. I mean, they say it is mean species abundance. So it you get the suggestion that they actually collected data of species and trends. They did not. No, it's just a model where biodiversity is equal to land area that has been converted from the 1700s to agricultural area or something. So there's no nature recovery as well. Huh? Or if all change, just in the word climate change, is made into damage. So change is damage, which is the same that has to be compensated.
So
so once you delve through that, then you get to the economics, which is your audience right. is most interested in. Then you also see, hey, it's just a theft. But right. then, yeah, it's more than it.
Right. It's a small group of people saying we're sovereign and we're taking away all of your sovereignty,
yeah.
including your property rights.
And then you get the third step. And I think this is the motivating thing because this is what makes people move. It's not about a euro less or more. It's not about the science, because 99% of the people I spoke have no interest in science whatsoever.
Right.
They don't even know how science works. And you can easily find it if they say the science is on our side. Well, there's no such thing as the science.
Right.
Because healthy science is about a healthy debate. And one scientist says, no, it's like this. No, the other says, it's like this. And this way you get to a better point of truth. At least you want to, as soon as they say the science, then you should at least be a little bit suspicious. So so then you get into climate alarmism. What is alarmism? It just means that you say everything change is damaged. So human CO2 suddenly becomes a sort of poison. Well, it's it's the greenest gas on Earth because it makes the Earth green and grow.
Huh? Right.
So it's crazy that you can make people believe something that is beneficial to nature, that it is actually green to remove CO2, which is the opposite.
But one moment,
okay. Yeah, the ideology is the most important, because this is what makes people move. They don't care about the science, but they have presented an image to the world and to people like, we create the better world, it's for the planet. But just hold on. What is the planet? Who is that? Well, it's the globalists.
Right.
So the planet, they, if you say we want to save the Earth, no, you want to save globalists' interests.
Right.
This is what it is about. So you can also, everyone knows this, with two caring hands with the Earth right. in between. But it's, you can also interpret this as control of right. Earth, because that's what it is about. And then you get also the connection with, we have the science. There's also this Baconian interpretation of science, where science is not about, just like how it was developed in the Catholic Church and also by Aristotle, like getting to know what is nature really about, and by knowledge of nature, getting closer to God, because then you get amazed by the workings of nature, which
right.
is also my interest. But the Baconian, Francis Bacon and his New Atlantis 1500 years ago, was science as a means of getting control.
Right.
So once you get this, science as a means of control, then you also know why they always say we have the science. This is also why the Waterboard Bank says we have science-based rules to judge your portfolio.
So let's talk before the COVID pandemic and after the COVID pandemic. Because before the COVID pandemic, when I tried to warn people about the push for central control, they just couldn't believe it was really that bad.
No.
You know, they couldn't, you know, I grew up in a financial world where you had to look at all the money globally. So, you know, we went from top down to bottom up and, you know, so I was very comfortable looking at things at a macro level or at a micro level, both.
Yeah.
That's how you're trained. But many people are busy, you know, leading their lives, and they just can't fathom that psychopaths are good at getting together and doing these kinds of things.
No, no.
Anyway, so, but then the pandemic happened, and now people are realizing, wait a minute, you know, a lot of things don't make sense. And if you look at the hypocrisy in the climate change or the nitrogen stuff, they're beginning to realize, oh, it is this bad. It really is this bad.
Yeah.
And not only that, we have to deal with it.
Yeah, but still they are forcing people not to talk about what causes it, but we are forced to talk about consequences of it, so of the policies. So you are forced to talk about more or less nitrogen, more or less CO2. So the discussion, or, oh, hypocrisy, they are doing this, instead of the core of the problem, which is the agenda. And it's a good point that you bring up, because I already said in 2017, I started with the interesting times, because I know, okay, with this climate policy, they are implementing a communist world regime, something lame between,
right,
which Holland is moving towards now.
But it's not communist because they have private profits.
Yeah, but it was with communists as well. You had the top officials, they controlled everything, and they had a double shower so they could sit there with a whore, and they had an elitist life.
Right.
And this was a great remark by Viktor Orban, that he doesn't see any difference between communists and neoliberals. He said neoliberals are communists with a diploma. Yeah. So, and this is what it's about, because you use governments creating oligopolies and monopolies, which is what Rockefeller has done. It's the same. Huh? It's just with Animal Farm. You look from pig to man and man to pig and cannot see which is which. So, but the one thing I did not understand is, how are they going to enforce this totalitarian CO2 state?
Well, digital
systems. They needed the leverage, which was the corona measures, to break resistance and bring poverty to small business. Many small businesses are out of business now. We have, like, only in cafe holders and Horeca in restaurants. They have a debt to the tax office of 20 billion euros, for example. All these small businesses are now bought up by bigger ones.
Right.
And through decentralization, then you create, again, networks of bigger companies that you easily control putting into this agenda.
Well, if people have to be dependent on the government for money, then you've got them.
So of course, then you can put your SDG on, and they already have that. You are measured. Also for credit worthiness, I already mentioned the Water Board Bank. It controls the local governments for funding, but also the housing. All social housing is controlled by the Water Board Bank, because they have housing corporations in the Netherlands have a debt of 30 billion euros to the Water Board Bank. And this is also how they implement the rebuilding of the housing in Holland, and also
so there's an old saying in New Jersey: make a law, make a business. And if you and I went to a island, and I gave you ownership of all the assets, but I gave me the right to print the money, then it would be a matter of time before I could make the rules, and then I would own everything.
Yeah.
So one of the complicated things about the situation with the SDGs is, if you're going to make real change, then the people have to make their own currency, or they have to control the currency, or the currency has to be done by a transparent governance system that can be trusted.
Yeah, but I think people are still not that far, because only small groups of people, relative small groups of people, are hit hard in one way. And that's the groups I have worked with. You can see with, for example, the farmers, they concentrate their land. The fishermen, they called it then the blue economy. As soon as they started switching, calling it just a fisherman, to a blue economy and seafood and all this kind of crazy stuff. Yeah, but again, all this fishery is concentrated in a few corporate multinationals.
I'll tell you a simple way to figure out who they hit first, because they go from the most productive to the least.
Yeah.
Okay. So the more productive the person is, the faster and harder they get hit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to destroy literally productivity.
Yeah.
So.
And centralize it in the hands of a few and put your ideology in place. And then there was, of course, the scary part that people speculated on, which was also on the Georgia Guidestones. Because eventually...
What was that?
The Georgia Guidestones were the ultimate...
No, I don't mean... No. I mean, what was it that they said on the Georgia Guidestones?
That the world population has to be maintained in balance with nature for about 500 million right. people.
Right.
Yeah. So we were glad it was destroyed in one way, because maybe we do not know yet who did it. But you can see that CO2 is just eventually a measure for population.
So,
and this was also the priority, also for the Club of Rome, the limits to growth. It was not about CO2, it was about population.
So I do think that we as people need to have a conversation about what is the ideal number of people, you know, what is our population? What's the ideal number of people we want and can afford and have, et cetera, et cetera? Because you know, in 1990, the per capita income in China was, say, 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And in America at that time was maybe 40. Now it's maybe 65,000. If all of Asia balances by coming up
mm-hmm.
and live the same way the Americans do,
mm-hmm.
we are going to destroy the planet.
This is an argument that you could have.
Yeah.
There is some merit in it, but unless you have unlimited energy.
So,
because with unlimited energy, you can make every waste product into something productive
right.
again.
But if we are going to, let's say we wanted to support a population of 20 billion people, we would need to change our culture. We would need to make changes. In other words, mm-hmm. if you look at the way we have been living vis-a-vis nature,
mm-hmm.
I would say we need to change.
No, oh, okay. Yeah.
And the globalist, you know, you can either change the culture and we can change together. So, for example, you could right now,
mm-hmm.
if you said to me that what is the number one cause of environmental damage, you know what I would say? The current currency system.
No.
Okay.
No.
So the current central banking system has done more environmental damage mm-hmm. than anything mm-hmm. else on the planet. But we could re-engineer the financial system so, in fact, everybody, you know, involved in currency or using financial systems would have enormous incentives to take wonderful care of the planet and the natural resources. So we could have a win-win relationship between financial equity and living equity in a way that simply markets and democratic process would produce, you know, care for the environment. Because people love the environment. They want to take good care of the environment.
Of course.
The impulse is there.
So, in fact, the modern environmental movement has succeeded in muddying the discussion about resources. Because they put it... eventually, if you move through all these arguments about climate protection, blah, 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 about farmers... of course, it's true that if I look to the way farmers farmed in my youth, the meadows were full of birds. But
right.
because of centralization and because of environmental regulations, they were forced to spend
right.
more money
right.
on investing in a new environmental friendly stable. The only thing they could do was intensify their
You're
business.
You're very funny, Rick. Sorry.
I know. Yeah. No, but it's so logical. So, and who was the profiteer of that? The Rabobank, because they had
really?
All have these big yeah. loans. If the Rabobank for another expensive equipment and everything.
Yeah, a lot of times they do it through the loan and debt policies.
Yeah,
that's how.
So,
they,
but
right.
if you change this policy, where huge interest rates have to be compensated by working harder and intensifying your practices more. Instead of that, you have more free choice. If you want to be a biological farmer, organic farmer, well, cool.
If you want to destroy the environment and the country, the fastest way to do it is to legalize usury. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Right there.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so we'll talk more about this when we talk about food. But one of the things I've spent a lot of time in my life trying to understand how people are manipulated to be against each other. So divide and conquer politics. But one thing that has been extraordinary to me is to watch how stealing people's property is marketed.
Yeah.
And so we have watched, in the name of climate change, systematically different people. So we'll talk in food about the farmers and fishermen, how an effort is being made to basically steal their property. And there are many different ways to do it. So it's, and if you look at how the spin works, they've got, you know, here's 80% of the people believing that it's okay if you steal their property. It has nothing to do with me. And it's extraordinary that they can market that, that they can persuade the majority of the people to let them systematically steal, not understanding that, of course, once you get that pattern set, they're going to steal everything from everybody.
Yeah, but my experience until now is people allow it and even applaud it until it hits them themselves. So you get the most resistance against climate policies if people start to feel it in their wallet. And they have now managed with all kinds of regulations that you do not feel it already. But now people are starting to feel it, and it hits them personally. And then they will, more people will open their eyes and see, hey, but then it will be told, oh, it's the war in Ukraine, or it's, but actually it's all climate policies.
Right.
Well, one great example is now scarcity on the energy markets. This is partly because of the Rockefeller-based divestment campaigns.
I would say it's central banking policy. To me, climate change is just part of that subset. But if you look at, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, the Fed printed $5.7 trillion and injected it, ECB $2.5 trillion. I mean, it's over $10 trillion being used to finance things like the clean, what is it?
Oh, the Green Climate Fund.
Trust fund. No, but look at how much money they're throwing it.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Right. So you print this money, you throw it, you know, so I describe it like this. You got the insiders, you got the outsiders. I print $10 trillion and give it to my insiders. And then I bust, you know, I declare all the outsiders' business non-essential. Yeah. So they're busted. And these guys have $10 trillion to go buy their, you know, things up, whether they're buying.
And we have to deal up with the inflation until, actually they did it the same here in Europe with the euro.
Right.
I know people also had the family of my wife, they had a huge amount of money, but it was halved by introduction of the euro. Suddenly their millions of guilders were millions of euros. But now you can buy as much for the euro as you could buy with guilders. So they just halved your income. And this was also to minimize government debts. Because then, if you minimize the debts of the governments, it's a very easy way to get the balance correct.
Well, here's the thing. If I just come and steal your property, then it's simple and everybody can see it.
Yeah.
But if I create this absolutely galactic empire of complexity around climate change and nitrogen.
Yeah.
You know, you have to give them credit. It's pretty clever.
It was, yeah. But then I still believe in Pinky and the Brain. you can be so clever, but there's always this human failure. And just like Boris Johnson being called that he was just partying on while Corona measures were on. So that's, he shows that he doesn't believe in it himself. This was what made this whole Corona measures also in Holland eventually collapse. Because it's from day one to two, it was just unbelievable. Nobody could really believe. Because here, look, Boris is doing it as well. So the British were the first one to leave these measures.
Right.
And then we had to follow as well. While I was pretty scared that we were following the Austrian example and the German example. Maybe they are still trying to enforce this in August or September, but now more and more people, I think, are seeing that.
The Austrian health minister just started blaming the doctors. I don't know if you saw it.
Oh, God. No.
Okay, so let's talk about what we can do. What, somebody's listening to this and they say, okay, what can I do? What can you do?
Now we are in a more civil war kind of phase. The farmers are now really at war with government and saying, we want you to skip these plans or otherwise we will not stop again. And this has moved all over the world because the police was really shooting at a young guy. How old was he? 16 years old. And this was also a great piece of propaganda from the police. Instead of admitting the blame, they were putting a mark of victimhood on the officer. He was the one who was shooting, but now he is the one who was so much hurt by how he was described in the media. This is what they were doing. But they're at war now with the government. I have had my experiences with this police. And you can also see that the whole governmental policy, also in security, has been moved around this agenda. What did they do? In 2012, they nationalized the police force. And they made it political. So the Ministry of Safety, so how Orwellian a name, we have a Ministry of Safety, but again, we borrowed this from the 9/11 policies.
See, that's our advantage in the United States. We have sheriffs. And sheriffs under the Constitution, the local sheriff, there are few places that don't have a sheriff, but most everybody does. The local sheriff, who's usually elected, is the decider of what is constitutional within that county.
Exactly. We used to have this a little more, but what did they do? They politicized the police. So everything was put under direct order of the Ministry of Safety, a name that we think derived from the Department of Homeland Security, which is the war on domestic terrorism. And they reformed the police and also selection procedures just so that the ones with heart for the police work and also who want to serve civilians have less to say, and the ones who want to enforce power, they are more at the front. So in the last years, especially during Corona measures, we had several examples of excessive police violence, and they are never corrected. There was even this guy from the United Nations, Niels Melzer of the Human Rights, and they had a report and an angry letter to the government, and they just silenced it. So I think what we will also see today is, again, excessive police violence.
But here's the thing. You can't institute this system by physical force. You have to, that's why the digital systems are so important. Mm-hmm. And there's just not enough police in the world. You can't get it to go by physical force. So you've got to get the digital systems and the digital control grid in place.
Yeah.
And so the question is, how do you persuade enough of the population to walk away? So we have this campaign called Cash. It used to be called Cash Friday. Now it's Cash Every Day.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing is a lot of small business people realize, hey, I'm losing 2 to 5% every month because I'm using these digital systems. Yeah. Let's get off of them and use cash. Mm-hmm. So I think cash is one thing you can do. But I think the more we walk away from the digital systems, the harder it is to implement the SDGs.
Yeah, but everything has moved in the other way. Of course, they use Corona to make everybody like a hygiene freak. Mm-hmm. So that's almost no one, even the fisherman who comes every week at our village to sell this, he already says that almost nobody wants to pay anymore with cash.
See, in the U.S., cash is rising.
Okay.
So they're walking away.
The biggest grocery store holder, the Ahold, mm-hmm. Albert Heijn, is already enforcing digital payments. And what they also do is, in the name of improving service, that you do not have a person behind the counter, but you get some cash robot where you scan your, and then you move through digital doors after you have scanned all your products. And the only way to pay is by digital. So they're just enforcing it through the bigger companies.
And you don't think we have the ability to walk around?
No, most people still follow it. Yeah.
So how do we change that?
I think this you cannot change that because it's they.
If you can't change that, they're going to win.
Well, maybe they will win for some. I think some people will step out. So I think this will start small, but don't underestimate, people are all very conservative. Rule number one is we don't want no fuss. We don't want to do anything, actually make it easy for us. And they have that on their side. The first thing people want is things to get easy. Yeah. So don't be too idealistic about people as well. No. And this is, I think, also a thing in the current freedom movement. They have a too rosy picture of humans. So in one way, the environmentalists and governments have some truth on their side. And this is also in the traditional Christian part. We are sinners. We are, well, the most evil is done by looking away and doing nothing when evil is happening. This is the way also people are, and they make use of human nature to implement these systems.
So I'm going to disagree with you here.
Okay.
Because I think that, you know, I've spent a lot of time studying control and how control works. Mm-hmm. And if you look at most of the people, so I live in a town in the United States called Hickory Valley. Mm-hmm. And most people in the East and West Coast think that people in Hickory Valley are stupid.
Okay.
And they explain our behavior by saying we're stupid. Mm-hmm. But if you've lived in Hickory Valley and you understand exactly all the different controls, so there are three primary control systems if you live in Hickory Valley, if you live anywhere. The first is you have the telecommunication system, which is delivering both surveillance and mind control, mm-hmm. entrainment. And now I'm talking about military-grade neurological weapons. It's real. Mm-hmm. The second is the nuts and bolts of the financial system, which is fantastically, you know, it's all run with AI and software, but it's fantastically granular. And if somebody doesn't behave, the next thing you know, their interest rate on their credit card is raised, or they lose their job. Or I'll give you a perfect example. I had a relative who quit the school system because all the parents were lobbying her to say that their children were ADHD, so that they could put them on Ritalin, because if they could put them on Ritalin, they could get a Social Security disability check, which meant if they got the Social Security disability check, they could afford to buy food for them.
Yeah.
And so she was being lobbied to say the kids were ADHD so they could be put on Ritalin, so they could get a check, so they could get them on food, and the school would get a bonus the more kids they got on Ritalin.
Yeah.
So if you look at how the money worked, it was all designed to drug the kids. It was a drugging system, and it was all in the nuts and bolts. Okay, so that's very complicated. Then you have a third thing called covert operations. Mm-hmm. And covert operations is if you don't behave, you know, if you don't go along with the mind control, and then you don't go along with the money, then they literally, you know, you get a home invasion. The next thing you know, somebody in your family's killed.
Yeah.
So they have a way of getting rid of people. So if you look at how these systems work, they work together and they work on each person and each family.
Yeah.
And the families learn over time that they are literally up against a very powerful army. They don't understand it all.
No.
But they know they're being listened to. They know they're being entrained. They know they're being incentivized. And they know that the covert operations are very dangerous and can get them killed. Yeah. They all have guns. There's a balance of power between the organized crime and the families, and that's why the gun issue in America is number one. Hmm. Because we know if they get the guns, it's, you know, we're dead.
Of course.
So, yeah.
And that's why we are in Holland, we are so vulnerable. It's even, you're not allowed to resist or anything. You're not even allowed to defend yourself. There's only this Article 41. And it says that in an excessive situation, you are allowed to defend yourself some way. But if government attacks you and, they have attacked me for three times now with violence and with pepper spray, and they did everything. They arrested me in my home. They put me on the floor. And I have a lot of experience already with excessive police and government violence.
Me too. So they haven't put me on the floor yet.
Yeah. But, okay. Yeah.
Well, they haven't only covertly. They haven't put me on the floor overtly.
Yeah. But The message is clear. You have to obey to the oligopolies, or they can even steal your children, for example. This is also what they did in Holland. There were 1,700 children from families were abducted by government, and they still don't know where these children are after so much years, and all the parents are in despair. And this is, and the prime minister who was responsible for this is still in charge. How do you explain this? So it's very easy, because Mark Rutte, with his World Economic Forum bag, is in the bag of the globalists, and they need to have him in place, right, just like Macron.
This is why I'm saying people, if you look at the behavior of the population, they understand intuitively that they're dealing with a very dangerous control system. Mm-hmm. And it looks like they're going along, but they're being herded in a very ugly way.
Yeah, and the thing also is they are forced to talk about different issues, while eventually, about nitrogen, about climate, about corona.
Right.
While actually, if you look at the consequences of these policies, they all move in one direction, and that is theft of the masses.
What do you mean?
Theft of the mass poverty. That's the whole middle class.
Right.
Just like in communism, the whole middle class will be stripped of their money, and of course after that, of your civil rights. Because it's very easy if you have no capital and you have no energy.
So are you saying there's nothing we can do?
Well, no. We're fucked. Yeah.
Well, this gets back to, one of the things I believe is that the more you centralization is a highly unproductive system, mm-hmm. but also the more you centralize, the more fighting you get. So yeah. I don't think that we can stop the globalists, but I do believe the globalists will kill each other.
Yes, because there's also this thing, even in the top dogs don't agree with each other, of course, because they're all human at last. So it's the same with, that's why I'm suspicious if people think of some outside force, just one unilateral force controlling everything, because there's always fighting fractions with different ideologies and different, and this is why I also think that it will collapse. Human failure, they're all human, and there will...
The negative productivity, I mean, the destruction of productivity is extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. Yeah. So now I've concluded that you're the pessimist and I'm the optimist.
In Dutch, I say pessimist tot in de kist, which means pessimist until I'm in the coffin. Yeah.
Ah, okay. No. Okay, well, with that...
But then you're the most positive, because it can only turn out better than you expected.
That's true.
So you have a win-win situation. If you were right, then you can say, oh, I was right. And if you were wrong, it's like, phew, I was not right. Yeah.
Okay, so anything else before we close on SDG?
Summarize, keep it simple. The 17 goals...
We need to worry about is climate change.
Well, this is the central thing, because this is the money part. This is the way that they do their theft out of the name of saving the planet.
Oh, no, because the climate change rules are a portion. But if you look at central banking, there are many more ways they're stealing. So
yeah, but this is the green cloak where they wrap all this part in. And it's not a small amount of money that they talk about. You had this guy, Mark Carney of the Bank of England, he called this... 90,000 billion euros before 2030 that they want to get out of the economy in the name of climate.
You would call that climate. I would call that fiat currency money printing.
Of course.
I wanted to talk about NGOs and the role of NGOs this time, but we'll talk about it when we talk about food, which is that we're going to jump over the end poverty to the zero hunger, number two, food, and our next discussion.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Ripka, thank you very much. I look forward to many more discussions on this topic.
Well, there's so much to say about it. And one way...
I think there's only one thing to say.
Stop it.
No.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah. That's the best summary of this whole discussion.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Soleria Report. Okay. Trudy, good job. Good job. She really wants to go.
Yeah,
Lucia.